This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 17th at 11:10 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it, like maybe Mark Sanford will win the Republican nomination for president. But for now, let's focus on realistic political stories. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look through the telescope at Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown, holding down the fort while my co-host Mike Thompson is off at an NPR conference. I would make him the Snollygoster of the week if he were not my boss, so I guess I shouldn't. I'm kidding, Mike. I'm kidding, of course. It's absolutely a worthwhile trip. I've been on a few myself. I'm also kidding about the jab at Mark Sanford, the former South Carolina governor, probably best known for slipping off to South America with a woman other than his wife. He stopped in Columbus Thursday morning as part of his completely realistic, not at all ridiculous campaign for the Republican nomination for president next year. So good luck to you, Mark Sanford. This will probably be the last time you are mentioned on our podcast. Something that will be mentioned a lot going forward is the race for the Democratic nomination for president, which is still wide open. As you've almost certainly heard at this point, the candidates met in the Columbus suburb of Westerville for their fourth debate this week. Not a ton of surprises at the debate, including candidates going after President Trump and supporting the House impeachment inquiry.
Sometimes there are issues that are bigger than politics, and I think that's the case with this impeachment inquiry.
In my judgment, Trump is the most corrupt president in the history of this country.
He has committed crimes in plain sight, and on this issue with Ukraine, he has been selling out our democracy.
That was Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and Kamala Harris. Another unsurprising trend from the debate, when you're Elizabeth Warren and you're the new frontrunner in the polls, you become a target.
I want to give a reality check here to Elizabeth, because no one on this stage wants to protect billionaires, not even the billionaire.
You have not specified how you're going to pay for the most expensive plan, Medicare for All. Will you raise taxes on the middle class?
I have made clear what my principles are here, and that is costs will go up for the wealthy and for big corporations, and for hardworking middle class families, costs will go down.
A yes or no question that didn't get a yes or no answer.
Sometimes I think that Senator Warren is more focused on being punitive or pitting some part of the country against the other.
And that was Amy Klobuchar, moderator Mark Lacey, Warren herself, Pete Buttigieg, and Beto O'Rourke. Lots to get here, lots of Ohio comments that came from the candidates during the debate. Joining me now to help understand it all, WOSU's reporter Nick Evans, who was at Otterbein University for the debate Tuesday. Good to have you back on Snollygoster, Nick.
Happy to be here.
Also with us this week is Ohio Public Radio and Television's State House Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, also a proud Otterbein alumnus. Karen, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Great to be here.
So, Nick, let's start with you. We heard the usual talking points a lot were directed at the new target, Elizabeth Warren. Let's focus on our state for now, which hosted the debate. What was the main message to voters here?
Well, I think the big thing to take away is that Ohio was a really great launching pad for a lot of national conversations. Mm-hmm. One of the big ones early was jobs and this question of, you know, what to do as the manufacturing sector has sort of shifted and is no longer the sort of reliable way to get into the middle class that it may have been, you know, 20, 30 years ago. They talked about how automation could potentially hit Ohio pretty hard. Bernie Sanders' answer to this is a federal jobs guarantee, sort of a New Deal style approach to it. Mm-hmm. Andrew Yang, on the other side of this, says, you know, what if we tried universal basic income? His idea of a freedom dividend. So every person 18 or older would get a $1,000 check in the mail every month. Elizabeth Warren, meanwhile, pushed back saying, you know, it's actually not automation that's the problem here. It's international trade policy that's allowed corporations in this country to shift jobs overseas. And she argues, you know, one way that you might be able to push back on that is if you had 40% of corporate boards made up of individuals selected by the employees of that company. Sort of an interesting approach that I don't think I've seen bandied about besides from her. Whether or not you could actually make that stick, I have no idea. Whether or not it would actually keep jobs in the country, I have no idea. But it was one of the ways in which they talked about Ohio issues. Another big one, abortion. We passed the heartbeat bill early this year. And one of the things that came up that I thought was pretty interesting came from Kamala Harris. She suggested an idea of sort of pre-clearance, sort of in line with the Voting Rights Act, the way that for certain states would have to get any changes they make to election law approved at the federal level. She says that she would do something similar for any laws passed at the state level that touch abortion rights. The Department of Justice would review them, make sure they don't conflict with existing precedent like Roe v. Wade before they could take effect.
Karen Kassler, gun control, obviously a big issue here in Ohio, something your bureau has covered a lot, especially in the wake of the Dayton mass shooting and as lawmakers debate several bills. Beto O'Rourke took some criticism over his proposed mandatory buyback for assault rifles. Did anything about gun control or anything else with big impact here in Ohio stand out to you?
Well, I think that was a big part of it. I mean, there was, you know, obviously the first third of it felt like was about impeachment, which is something that I think some polls are showing is gaining in terms of support among Democrats and independents. And that kind of speaks to the whole idea of how Ohio will play in the 2020 election, whether Ohio has still maintained its bellwether status, whether Ohio will still be the state that helps pick the president, or whether the state is firmly Republican, which is a debate that we've been having now really since 2016 and definitely with 2018 in the gubernatorial race and how things shook out then. So I think following that and also the whole gun issue, that's a really good point to bring up here because it's a major issue for Ohio right now. Governor Mike DeWine proposed his, what he's calling his Strong Ohio gun violence proposal last week. It finally got a bill number this week and it's going to start its journey through the legislature this week. And there's some real questions about whether that bill actually does what gun control activists want, but also whether it goes too far for gun rights activists. So hearing the candidates talk about their views on guns was really important, I think, here for people in the arena, but also outside. Gun rights activists were among the folks who were outside, and there were a lot of people outside who were debating and demonstrating their various causes. There was a group that was walking around in sort of an open carry march to show their support for gun rights. There was a lot of activity going on outside the Reich Center at Otterbein where this was all taking place that I think was really interesting to see as well.
I think the gun control stuff that they brought up at the debate sort of was a reflection of one of the big picture debates going on among the candidates, this idea of, you know, realism versus idealism. Do you push for the, like, go for broke and, like, the biggest, boldest initiative that you can come up with, like mandatory buybacks, or do you focus on the art of the possible? Now, one of the big things that Pete Buttigieg brought up is, you know, we're so close to passing universal background checks and potentially even an assault weapons ban and red flag laws. I don't know if that's true. I mean, like, I'm not sure I see that. I mean, we look at what's happened in Ohio with the Strong Ohio plan, and it seems like DeWine and Husted are more or less tying themselves in knots to try to get to something that approaches a red flag law but isn't one, and tries to approach universal background checks but isn't that. And so one of the things we saw with this gun debate was that there was this real conflict between, like, what do you do? Do you go all the way there, or do you focus on the thing that is attainable? And I think it's not clear at all that the thing – that moderated position is even something that is attainable.
Aside from the Beto O'Rourke idea of the mandatory assault rifle buyback, what is a big picture idealistic gun policy among Democrats? I mean, aside from these incremental changes, what would they do if they didn't have to poll with moderate Democrats? What's their perfect scenario?
You know, it seems really interesting to me because this idea of, like, a red flag law at the national level seems really problematic. I think that the only thing that would really make sense from the federal level would probably be something commerce related, and that then you get into the idea of potentially an assault weapons ban again, which I don't know. Like, that seems like a really, really heavy lift.
Karen, Andrew Yang and Beto O'Rourke both floated the idea of decriminalizing opioids for personal use during this debate. And I don't think that we're anywhere near that happening, but it was interesting to see mainstream candidates proposing this in Ohio, of all places, which has been devastated by the opioid epidemic. You talked to Attorney General Dave Yost this week about the massive opioid lawsuit playing out in Cleveland. Do you have any sense that this legalization of opioids for personal use could happen anytime soon?
Well, he was actually asked that at the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum that I moderated with him. One of the attendees actually asked him about the criminalization of drugs in general. And, you know, he said, as Attorney General, he doesn't pass the laws, he enforces the laws that the legislature passes. And so I think, if anything, the legislature has been trying to get tougher on some of these laws that govern opioids. I mean, just in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years here, the legislature and the governor and the attorney general have shut down pill mills. They've increased the restrictions on prescriptions of opioids and made some rules on what age groups and how many actual pills people in those age groups can get. They've done some more things on drug sentencing. But yeah, there's a real question here about what the role of arresting your way out of this process really and this crisis really would play. And so I think in a state where, you know, the last time we saw any sort of opioid overdose numbers, we're still waiting for the new numbers to come out. They should have come out even a couple of weeks ago in terms of the trend over the last couple of years. Ohio was number 2 in the nation in terms of opioid overdose deaths last year. And so I think that's an idea that maybe some people in this state would really not be too thrilled about. And just think about how difficult it's even been to have a conversation about legalizing marijuana, even for medical use. There's been a lot of problems with the Medical Marijuana Commission in terms of getting it passed and in terms of getting it really fully implemented. To do that with opioids just really seems like almost an impossible task in a state that's been devastated by the opioid crisis.
And our addiction services agencies already overwhelmed? And WOSU's Paige Flager did some reporting on that this week. A lot of people say they get the help they need only when they go to prison, only when they're locked up and they really face this, oh my God, kind of moment.
And that goes back to some of what we were just talking about with the gun control bill that Mike DeWine has put forward. The gun violence bill, I guess, is a better way to put it. There is this provision in there that's not a red flag law. It expands the pink slip law, which allows people to be involuntarily hospitalized for mental illness. DeWine wants to add substance abuse disorder to that. And I asked Senator Matt Dolan, who is the sponsor of that bill, is there enough treatment for that to happen? Are there enough places, beds, for people who would be involuntarily hospitalized under that law to get the help that they need? And Dolan even said, we've got to do more about that. We're trying to find other ways to make sure that there is enough treatment for those folks. But yeah, that's a real serious question.
Also, as you mentioned, Karen, the circus outside the debate, if you will, the circus really did come to town. Hundreds of protesters outside. We saw the pro-gun march you talked about. There was a pro-union rally, supporters and critics of President Trump holding signs, making their cases. Nick Evans, you were there both outside the debate and inside the debate. Just from an organizing perspective, how do you think Otterbein and Westerville did?
You know, from my perspective, it seemed pretty darn good. You know, they closed down a bunch of streets around the university itself.
Sure.
And, you know, there were people that were, you know, on corners with signs. You know, there was a little bit of friction back and forth sometimes. But, you know, for the most part, it seemed to go really smoothly. Getting in and getting out wasn't too much of a hassle. It seemed like they did a really nice job.
Karen, your alma mater, how do you think they did?
I'm proud of my alma mater. I mean, when you saw, I honestly did not recognize the Reich Center when my colleague Andy Chow tweeted out a video of what it looked like that morning, where CNN has completely transformed it. And, you know, I've been a moderator at debates where buildings and facilities are completely transformed. And it is amazing what can be done with lights and stage work and that sort of stuff. But this was really incredible. And I was at the debate in Cleveland in 2015, the first Republican debate. Remember when there were the two different debates where there was the kids table, the smaller debate, and then the bigger debate and everything. And I was amazed at the number of people that were there. And this was at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, formerly the Q in Cleveland. And I kept thinking, how are they going to translate that to Otterbein University? They made it work. And it was really very impressive. It felt secure, but it felt accessible. It didn't feel overly crowded. And of course, there were these spaces for people who were who wanted to have their own demonstrations, they were able to do that too. So it was really, it was a well-done event, I think.
I guess one closing comment. Do either of you see a clear winner from Tuesday's debate?
I think Otterbein won.
Go Cardinals.
And you know, and I think the state of Ohio gets a little bit of a win here, too, because I think there were people who were ready to write Ohio off, especially for a Democratic Party win. And I think to kind of see this and to kind of dig into the numbers a little bit and to see how the numbers are shaking out, especially in some suburbs, how some of our urban areas are strongly blue and the suburbs are starting to turn blue, I think that that's something that Democrats are looking at as maybe bringing Ohio back into the political fray. Now, if you didn't like Ohio being a battleground state, then you're not happy about this.
Right.
But I think that it keeps Ohio in the political conversation. And I think that is potentially better for all Ohioans.
Yeah, in terms of candidates, it seemed to me like Elizabeth Warren got treated like the front runner.
Mm-hmm.
She took a lot of fire and handled it for the most part pretty well. Biden came in with some very serious questions and was able to kind of lay low and scoot through. I mean, I think the questions about Hunter Biden will dog him.
We're going to get to that here later in a few minutes.
But, you know, it seemed as though the folks that were doing well continue to do well, that sort of second tier of candidates, the Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar's of the world, I think did something to help themselves. But whether or not they entered that top tier, it's not clear yet.
The horse racing already in full effect here in Ohio. Lots more to come over the next 13 months. WOSU's Nick Evans and Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler, thanks again for joining Snollygoster.
Happy
to
do it.
Great to talk to you guys.
We'll be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week award, which we dole out to the week's shrewdest politician or political move. This week, we're staying with the debate and giving it to Nick Evans. Foreshadowed that a little bit. Joe Biden, Uncle Joe and all his aw shucks appeal. Biden has criticized the president a lot for Trump's family capitalizing on his presidency, emoluments and all that. Well, Joe Biden's family has made some money off of that name, too. His son, Hunter Biden, worked for a Ukrainian natural gas company while his dad was the Obama administration's point person on Ukraine. When Biden was asked about that during this week's debate, he really struggled to muster a good answer.
Look, my son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. Rudy Giuliani, the president, and his thugs have already proven that they, in fact, are flat lying.
Did nothing wrong, but he has not been so eager to say the same about the Trump family. Later in the day, the next day, on Wednesday, he targeted the president for not releasing his tax returns, avoided the question. So for criticizing others for something that your own family appears to do as well, Joe Biden, you are this week's Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, send us an email to snollygoster@wosu.org. Send us segment ideas as well, and also be sure to leave us a good review wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.